welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
You happy with that, Brendan?
That's great. Yeah, thank you. That's just for Jason to be back on.
Hi,
I'm Brendan. I'm a sexaholic and pleased to be here today again. And at the request of this group, I've been asked to go through the 12 steps, and today I'm on step two. And, step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. When I came into recovery programs, I came into AA, first of all, and I was quite clearly off my head. I was going to three meetings a day just to get through the day without picking up a drink. And it was 8 years later that I got into this program. But I'd known about it early on in my sobriety and tried to get around it, but it took me 8 years before I got sober. And, when I got into the 12-step recovery, I knew that I was completely powerless over the alcohol, and I knew that my life was completely unmanageable. I'd been in before, I hadn't worked the program, I hadn't done the steps, I'd gone 3 years without a drink, then I picked up again and I went crazy. And I was out for 5 years. And when I came back in, I was absolutely desperate. Absolutely desperate. I knew that I wasn't coming to the meetings for companionship and not the way I had first come. I thought the problem was the substance. And when I came back, I knew the problem was something in me. And, I came to step two and said, that came to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. And I just said, I hope so, but I wasn't going to pick up on the God that I'd been brought up with. The religion, the faith of my fathers, you might call it. And I had to get something. And I just decided I would take whatever was responsible for the beauty in nature. I could see that there was some kind of intelligence in nature, that the hummingbird being the only creature that was capable of pollinating some flowers that had been developed just exactly, his beak would reach into deep into this thing, that something like that was just showed some kind of intelligence in nature. And I just took that, and there was, I was living in Latin America, and the indigenous peoples used to talk about Pachamama, Mother Earth. And I thought that's what I'll take as my higher power. And that worked for me at the start, because I just had to be prepared to believe that there was some power greater than myself in order to be able to start in this. And it was important that I could find something that was real to me. And I used to go for walks in nature all the time in the mornings. And as I'd walk in nature down by the, I was back living in Ireland at the time, and I'd walking down by the sea in my hometown, which is Galway, I'd look out at it sometimes and I'd just see the peace on the water. Sometimes it'd just be so flat. It might be a swan out of the water. Whatever it was, and I just the sort of peace that it gave me. And I'd look out and I'd see the beauty of it, and I could just feel that there was some power there that was greater than me. And that, opened up a chink in my armor, because I had this resistance to the whole idea of God. At 16, I had walked out of the church you know, thinking everybody is there, they're all chanting away. And I just thought it means just as much as any chant that you might hear coming from, you know, people anywhere in a language you didn't understand. It was just meaningless. And I saw people as being hypocritical, and, you know, that where was this love that people talked about? And where was this understanding? And everybody had differing opinions and putting other people down. And so, you know, that's kind of what worked for me when I was coming back, was just this idea of some power that was greater than me. And I didn't hang around on the second step. I didn't spend a lot of time, you know, trying to work out what this God or this higher power was. I was just, they said I had to have one. I've got to have one, because, you know, I couldn't rebel against the program, because I was desperate. If this wasn't going to work, if I was going to start picking it apart and say, look, well, I don't want this, I want something else, it was just, you know, it was going to be futile. I knew that I needed something, and that just coming into the meetings and sitting down and telling people how, oh, my difficulties, and I'm trying this, and I'm trying so hard, and this, that, and the other, that wasn't going to cut it. I needed help. I needed help. And, you know, if the people that I was around and the people that were staying sober were saying that I needed a higher power, well, then I was just going to have to get over my prejudices and start to be open to the notion. And being able to see the power of nature and knowing just, well, I had the opportunity to work with people that were working close to the land, and I could see their relationship to their land. And they, you know, indigenous peoples were talking about all my relatives in nature. I could tune into that. And that was just, it just opened up the door. It meant I didn't have to spend my time struggling over this. And I had difficulty, you know, that if I was to talk about God to people, or even a higher power, you know, people start thinking, well, you know, like, I mean, he's lost it. And, you know, he has no strength in himself. Wouldn't you think that he'd believe in himself and not all this mumbo jumbo? And I just had to get over that. And over the years, you know, I did go back to the faith of my father's, and I did start to attend. I remember early on, it was a Christmas, and I was in Cusco in Peru, and I was there with my partner at the time, and I went out, and I was walking around, and I saw it must have been Christmas Eve, and there was a mass on, and I went in to the back of the church, and I listened, and there was a priest there, and he was speaking, and he was talking in a way which was all embracing about people's beliefs. He wasn't striking out and saying, like, this is the only one. If you don't follow this, you're going to burn in hell, et cetera, as I thought that I had heard before. And that just opened up a little chink there for me. And then I was passing through Los Angeles Airport, I think it was, and I was in a bookshop. Well, I was just looking through the books, and this book fell onto the ground, and I picked it up, and it was a book by the Dalai Lama. And I can't remember the exact name of it now, just so I think, but I flicked open the book, and the page it opened up at, I looked at it, and it said, you know, here was the Dalai Lama, like the head of a major religion, saying that, you know, religion wasn't necessary for spirituality. No, that spirituality was about the way I'm dealing with other people. That religion could be an addition to it, but basically that the heart of it was, I could ask myself if I was being spiritual in relation to how was I treating other people. And that was all embracing. And it just opened it up a little bit more for me. It made me feel, you know, there's something here. There's something here. It's like, it's not, I don't have to wait in terms of, you know, to find out whether or not, like, I'm creating a relationship with a higher power. I don't have to sort of, you know, necessarily go and live in a cave and meditate in silence or whatever for the things. I could actually sort of look at the way, how am I actually dealing with other people? And it's interesting, you know, Bill W., he has a very, it's a small little book, and it's called, is it The Best of Bill? And it's, there's seven stories in there that come from the grapevine. They deal with things like faith, hope, and charity and whatever. But he has one in which he's talking about, is it love? And I may be wrong now in that, but you'll find it if you read the book. But he's talking about how he visited a doctor and his wife in a small Midwestern town in the US. And it was a coal mining town. And this doctor, Bill, was there, and Bill was saying to him about how he'd had this incredible spiritual awakening. And the doctor was asking him, like, could it not be something else there, Bill? Could I mean, and Bill started to get aggressive about it. He was like, no, because he'd had this massive experience in which God had flowed into his life and this, that, and the other. And Bill was, you know, I won't say that he was rude, but he was discourteous. And he went away. And some time later, he went back again and he visited, and the doctor had just died recently. And Bill sat down with his wife, and his wife is telling him about the doctor and how he had been, you know, he'd been, you know, up at the top of his class when he qualified, and he was from a good family, and he could have, well, a good family, let's say, is sort of a family that was connected or whatever, and would have had a, you know, some influence. And he could have got into any of the best hospitals around and sort of had a really good and plush life. But he had gone down there on his internship to this coal mining town, and he had stayed there and he had worked for the people. And his wife, you know, had asked him about this, and he had said, like, that, you know, really, he just sort of felt that the people needed him. And the doctor, you know, when he contracted cancer or whatever it was that was taking him away, you know, he hadn't told his wife. And she said to him at the end, why didn't you tell me? And he said, like, well, I couldn't see the point in worrying you. And Bill listened to this and he thought, man, he said, this person has so much more spirituality than he had. You know, that this person had had a contact with people and with the spirit. And our program, it tells us in step 12 that it says, you know, that what we get out of this, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of practicing these steps, you know, we sought to practice these principles in all our affairs and, you know, and take it out to other people. And, you know, there, it's not saying, you know, having secured, you know, great wealth or a relationship, you know, with a happy family or all these various things. It says the thing that we're going to get from working this program is, it says, a spiritual awakening. And in the doctor's opinion, at the start of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the doctor says that in order to recover from an addiction, basically, what is needed is a complete psychic change. In other words, a complete change in the way we think. And I remember, you know, listening to speaker tapes early on in sobriety and people sort of saying how their sponsor told them they were going to have to change everything in their way of thinking. And I showed them, that's crazy. How could you change everything the way you think? And over the years of working program, I found that my thinking has changed dramatically in relation to so many things. Now, in relation to the very thoughts of, you know, good and bad, what does that really mean? You know, what does success mean? Is success, I used to think, well, you know, I was born in Ireland, and so I'd like to have a place to live in Ireland. And, you know, I like France, you know, it'd be nice to have a place to live in France as well. And, you know, now I'd been living in Latin America. So, you know, my idea was that, like, sort of success would be having enough money to have properties in all these places and to be able to travel through all this and whatever. That hasn't happened. That hasn't happened. As a matter of fact, in sobriety, I did buy a place in Peru, and that was a real God gift, you know. But I lost
5 minutes.
Thank you. I lost it again in sobriety by not taking care of my activities. And I thought, how can that be? How could it be that God would give you something and then, you know, that it would be taken away? And, you know, I learned from it actually that I do believe greatly that I have a higher power, and that my God, as I'm comfortable now to go to God, you know, it does look out for me, but that I have a responsibility to look out for the gifts that I've been given. And one of those gifts is a program. Now, I had thought, you know, that I got up this morning and I was reading the second step in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was reading around it in the 12 and 12. And, you know, in that it was saying to us that in the Big Book, it was saying, oh, bear with me a second, that, gosh, it's going to go on me now here. It says that we're, you know, we're blinded basically against the idea and the notion of religion, and I'm not professing a religion here, but, you know, the concept of God and whatever, that we have to do things ourselves. But the truth of the matter is it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. And I, because I'm powerless, as I accepted in step one, I have to find a power greater than me that can keep, you know, can keep me sober. I have to find a power greater than me that can help me to deal with any problem that I have today. There are some small ones that I can deal with, but the larger issues of life, the larger issues of the twists in my character and whatever, I can't just deal with them myself. I need that help. I need that help of a higher power. And I was in a workshop, and the woman was taking us through the steps, and she was saying that, you know, in step two, it's if I look at what is it I'm powerless over today, then I need a power that can help me to overcome that powerlessness, whatever it might be today. And I turn to that. It's a progressive thing. I don't need to understand, and I don't need to, you know, be able to sort of visualize a God. I don't. What I need to be able to do is sort of say, there's some power out there that's helping me. And, you know, I actually started to go back to a religious practice, not for the practice. I didn't even really believe in the God that they were talking about there at the time. But I said that I would take an hour a week to go to this religious practice, just basically to go somewhere to say thank you to whatever power it was that was keeping me sober. You know, to go and not ask for anything. And actually in the Big Book, it says that, you know, we've been wrong in the way we've been approaching this thing. Those of us that had at some stage had done our lives, we had been busy telling God what we wanted. I wanted it this particular way. And it's really interesting. They say there's no point in me praying for, you know, God, like I, as somebody said, you know, if you're praying for a car, you know, if you want God and you pray, God, I really like that, it's a really good car. You know, the answer is, well, go and get a job, you know. And this is the sort of thing, it sort of breaks down. It's like, the other thing is, remember, the basis, and we'll find this out next week when we're talking about step three, my problem is not the lust. That's just a symptom of my problem. My problem is selfishness, self-centeredness. Page 62 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me this. So I need freedom from this selfishness, because that's what's going to kill me. And if it's selfishness which is going to kill me, then praying for selfish things is not necessarily going to come up with any good answers from that. The last thing that I want to say today is that, you know, the reason I saw God working in my life, because, you know, things just happened when they were needed. They didn't happen when I wanted them. They happened when they're needed. And there's so many times, you know, I didn't have the money. Where was it going to come from? How could it possibly occur? And I just remember one particular instance. I had bought a flat in Latin America, and I was going to make the first payment. And I had checked to make
time.
Thank you. I'll just finish up with this. Going to make the payment. And I went via, and I said, on the way, I said, I'd go to my AA meeting. And I went into the AA meeting, and I came out of the meeting, and I couldn't find the check. I said, well, what's going on here? This is nuts. Like, you know, I had the check going in. I can't find it. I've only got so many pockets. It's not here. And I jumped in a taxi to go back to my flat to sort of see if I could find it. And I'm going back and I was furious. I was like, this was this. God, how can you do this? How can you do this? And I suddenly thought, like, wait a minute. You know, I've got this higher power. My higher power is supposed to give me what I need. I'm supposed to be playing this. I better trust it. I went back to my flat and couldn't find the check. But I said, okay, I'm going to look in my account. I know I haven't got the money. I'm going to look in my account. And I opened up my computer, went in, looked at my account, and there's $2,000 in my account. And I had no idea where it come from. It hadn't been there the day before. It was there now. And I had absolutely no idea where it came from. And I didn't find out till 2 weeks later where it had come from. Somebody had paid me in advance for the thing that they hadn't even told me that they were going to ask me to do. And, you know, and I went in and I paid the check. That has happened so often in my life that at some stage I started to say, this isn't just pure coincidence. So I started to trust that there was a higher power out there. And what I found is when I live as if there's a higher power helping in my life goes better. And whether it's out there or not, whether this is a complete confusion in my head, and I'd find out later that really there was no God, is irrelevant. What I find is when I live by spiritual principles and as if there is a God, my life goes better. And that's good enough reason for me to keep going. It. Thanks for letting me share.
It's great.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.